broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It's strange when someone comes in and congratulates.
Well, the child's house needs to come first.
I think that's the right thing to do.
My daughter's reaction. She's definitely a tramp.
Yeah. World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Well, in fact, we know what we're doing on this show. And that is, you know, I hate to say it, but that's refreshing. I think that's a refreshing change, don't you? You're actually listening to a radio show. We know exactly what the hell it is we're doing. 877-876-PHIL. There's some of these guys and gals, you know.
Well, they try to be, they're not even sure.
Right. Well said, bud. They try to be, they're not even sure. We know exactly what the hell we're doing. We know exactly what it is that we're saying. We know exactly why we say what we say. We can back up everything that we say. We never have to apologize for it. You notice these people that apologize all the time, Robert?
Yeah, but one guy, what was that guy's name?
Don Imus?
Yeah, Don Imus had to apologize. And another guy, I don't know.
There's a guy had to apologize because he talked about Obama or something.
What are you talking about, man? I mean, you two guys, you in half sentences.
The one guy had to apologize about something.
There's always cats that are having to apologize. They're always, oh, I'm sorry I said this. I'm sorry I said that. I shouldn't have said this. I shouldn't have said that. And we had to suspend this guy for this, and we had to suspend this guy for that. You don't have to hear that on our, we know why we say what we say, and we don't apologize for anything. You see, the reason why some of these people got to apologize for the stuff they say is they don't know why they said it in the first place, the stupid bastards. They're sitting there on a microphone that's hot, going out over God knows how many square thousands of miles, talking to I don't know how many millions of people, and these jackasses say stuff they don't know what they're talking about. With all due respect to Don Imus, he's a very, very funny guy, and he's a longtime pro. He should have known better. But I'm not going to beat up Don Imus. He's recuperated himself. But some of these guys, you know, oh, I'm really sorry that I did what I did and I said what I said. The hell with that. We're not apologizing for anything. Then there are people that say stupid stuff, and it's stupid, and they should apologize, and they don't because they don't want to look like they're punks, you know.
Yeah, I can name a couple of people like that. They say the most racist stuff, and they should apologize and go, I'm going to stand by that. Well, are you a racist? No, but I'm standing by it.
Yeah, well, I know who you're talking about there. No, we don't do that on this show. Now, they may not like some of the stuff that's said, and they may say, you should apologize, to which I will always say, no, I'm not. Why would I apologize for saying something I meant to say? Well, didn't you know that it was, oh, I knew that it was going to offend some people, but it offended the exact people that I wanted to offend, and it pissed off the right people here, and it made the right people happy, and I may see, I know my audience well enough to know, here's the people that are going to laugh, here are the people over here that are going to scratch their you-know-what and go, I don't know what he's doing. Here are the people that are going to be pissed, and here are the people that are going to be, like, clueless. All of those people I'm very aware of, I know them intimately, and all of them react the way I want them to. So I don't have to ever apologize to them.
What about the people what is, like, offended, though?
I'm not apologizing to them.
Yeah, but they were offended.
So what? That's the point. I wanted them to be. Oh, I'm sorry I offended you. I meant to offend you. See? But that's not a lot of people. I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to piss people off. All right, 877-876-PHIL. So Oksana Grigorieva, and I keep butchering her name, not because I want to. It's just Oksana Grigorieva. Violates a court order to speak with Larry King. And we're going to talk about that or finish up our conversation in a moment on that. A new report says the current foreclosure crisis could destabilize the American financial system, which basically means the world financial system. And Army Sergeant Junta gets the Medal of Honor. This is a young man who got the Congressional Medal of Honor, and he's lived to tell about it. I mean, he received the award at the White House yesterday, the first living recipient of the Medal of Honor in 40 years. 40 years, because it's generally a medal that is given posthumously. And the reason why is because the Medal of Honor is given for acts above and beyond the call of duty. And that means that these are things that the individual does that you could never be ordered to do. No one would ever order you to go out and throw yourself on a hand grenade or go out and save three comrades in the face of enemy fire, which is what Sergeant Junta attempted to do in Afghanistan. They can't order you to do that. You do it because it is something that is above and beyond the call of duty. And as the result, generally, the people who engage in that kind of act die in the process, and they receive the Medal of Honor posthumously. But Sergeant Salvatore Junta, who rushed into enemy fire and pulled three wounded soldiers to safety during a harrowing battle in Afghanistan in 2007, became the first living soldier since the Vietnam War to be awarded the Medal of Honor. And there was a ceremony there at the White House. And this is President Barack Obama awarding Army Sergeant Salvatore Junta the Medal of Honor.
Today, therefore, marks the first time in nearly 40 years that the recipient of the Medal of Honor for an ongoing conflict has been able to come to the White House and accept this recognition in person. It is my privilege to present our nation's highest military decoration, the Medal of Honor, to a soldier as humble as he is heroic, Staff Sergeant Salvatore A. Junta.
In an interview on PBS, Sergeant Junta's asked if he's been able to accept the notion that he's considered a hero.
I know heroes. I've met heroes. I've met some of the bravest people in the entire world, and I've had the privilege to serve with them. And when someone comes and says, you know, hey, you know, you're the man, congratulations, you're an American hero, I just take it in stride, and I think about all my heroes and all the people I look up to and all the people who have given so much and taught me so much.
Here he is talking about the real heroes, the troops who died in the firefight in Afghanistan, from which he garnered the Medal of Honor.
It's strange when someone comes in and congratulates me, and I have to, of course, okay, this is very good, this is very positive, this is for a lot of things, and it brings back instantly the memory of Specialist Hugo Mendoza, Sergeant Joshua Brennan, and think, you know, that's who needs to be congratulated, and they're not here to take this congratulations. They gave every single one of their tomorrows, and I'm the one that they're going to pat on the back and thank and give a hug. It's difficult sometimes.
So here is what happened. On October the 25th of 2007, Junta's platoon was ambushed by Taliban insurgents in the Korangal Valley of Afghanistan's Kunar province. Two soldiers were immediately injured. Then a third soldier was struck. According to the certificate, quote, Sergeant Junta charged headlong into the wall of bullets to pull him to safety behind what little cover there was. Junta was struck by two bullets himself, but he quickly recovered. Junta and others on his team mounted a counterattack, eventually reaching another injured soldier. Junta continued pressing ahead in search of Sergeant Joshua C. Brennan, the third wounded soldier and one of Junta's best friends. He crested a hill alone with no cover, but the dust kicked up by the storm of bullets still biting into the ground. Junta found two insurgents attempting to carry Brennan away. He opened fire on the insurgents, killing one and wounding the other. Even as bullets impacted all around him, he grabbed his friend by the vest and dragged him to cover. For nearly half an hour, he worked to stop the bleeding and to help his friend breathe until help arrived. Brennan was one of the two soldiers, though, who died on that day. Obama told Junta that his courage prevented the capture of an American soldier and brought that soldier back to his family. That was Sergeant Brennan, who is the Taliban were attempting to abduct, and Junta killed and wounded these Taliban and got the young man, although the sergeant died. So that's the award. Sergeant Junta was raised in Cedar Rapids and in Hiawatha, Iowa. He was also awarded the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart, among other awards. He's a member of Company B, 2nd Battalion Airborne, 503rd Infantry Regiment, stationed in Vicenza, Italy. What?
What is that? What is that?
Yeah, what's that mean?
What does what mean?
Well, in fact, he was in a 500 and in a what?
You mean the unit he was in?
Yeah, what did it mean? He was in Company B, but what?
Company B, 2nd Battalion, 503rd Infantry Regiment.
Which one is which?
I don't know, man. That's what he's in.
Is that the Marines?
No, that's the Army.
That sounds more like the Marines to me.
Yeah, I was going to say it sounds like Marines because of airborne and everything.
That's the Army. What do you mean sounds like the Marines? That's the Army, okay?
But what about Company B?
What about Company B? What is it with you guys, man? I don't understand. It's what he's in, okay?
I don't. You got to tell what a guy's doing. Is that the Army?
Yes, it's the Army.
Well, why don't they say it?
Dude, I don't know why they don't say it, man, but you ought to be able to figure it out.
It says the guy's in the 2nd Battalion. What's that?
That's the Army. The 2nd Battalion of the Army, Company B, 503rd Infantry Regiment, Airborne. Okay?
What about that Airborne you had?
The Airborne that I have, the stuff I take on the airplane?
Yeah.
That's vitamin C, you jackass. Get out of here.
They don't tell you.
Look, man, here's a great idea. If you want to find out about all this, go online and look it up, okay? I'm just giving the basics here. What about the airborne I take on the airplane? So that's a hell of a story, isn't it? And if you want to know more about our Medal of Honor recipients, go to the Medal of Honor page. The Congressional Medal of Honor page lists every one of the Congressional Medal of Honor recipients. And it goes all the way back to the Civil War, maybe before. I think when the Congressional Medal of Honor was originally awarded, I think was the Civil War. And there was a period there where they were giving out so many of them in the 19th century that sometime around the turn of the 20th century, I guess it was at that time called the War Department, the Department of Defense, said, we got to get some standards for this thing. You know, we're giving it out to anybody and everyone. So they finally did. And they, as the result, took the Medal of Honor back from some people who had not really, it wasn't that they were bad soldiers, but they had not, the standard that they established for the Medal of Honor was very, very high standard, going above and beyond the call of duty. So in that respect, they sort of refined the requirement. It is the highest medal given to a soldier. And so that's that. So you can go and check that out on the Medal of Honor page. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and of course, philandryshow.com. The Thanksgiving travel this year is going to be, quote, a nightmare, and Glee is at the top of this week's best-selling iTunes singles. Why are we doing that story? Because our producer, Jason Rantz, is a big Glee fan. By the way, the first award for the Medal of Honor was made March 25th, 1863, so it was the Civil War. Thank you. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I just did this stupid story. Why would I want to go back to this this Daily Mail story on Oksana Grigoreva? And this is the reason I just was talking to Jason Rantz, our producer. I said, first of all, the Daily Mail is the story that we're drawing this information from because they were very comprehensive in describing the interview with Larry King. Okay, that's fine. But the Larry King interview, I got it on tape. We heard two cuts from it. I guess you're going to hear the rest tonight. And the rest of your story, Daily Mail, is, you know, I can wipe with it. That's about all the good it does me. You got nothing in here, man. And not only that, whoever your reporter is out here in Los Angeles, they wouldn't know. I think they know what a gag order is, but I don't think they know it has anything to do with a judge or a court. There's no gag order. I'm sitting there reading about a gag order that Oksana Grigoreva's violating. She's not violating any gag order. There ain't no gag order, you dumb limey.
They ought to be able to write better.
Yeah, no kidding. They ought to be able to write better. You know, and for the rest of you, you know, TMZ and the rest of you guys, I don't know what you're doing, man, but I got to go to a British newspaper to get detail about this because you guys are thumbing it. And I got to read some dumbass Brit reporter talking to me about a gag order. He wouldn't know. The only thing he knows about, well, I shouldn't say, but
yeah.
877-876-PHIL. New Yorkers heading over the river and through the woods to Grandma's house for Thanksgiving. We'll have a lot more company on the roads this season. AAA is projecting that 42.2 million merrymakers will travel at least 50 miles between Wednesday, November 24th, and Sunday, November the 28th. Also, AAA says it's already looking like there will be more Christmas season travelers, a prospect that already has visions of dollar bills dancing in the heads of happy travel agents. That's good. The anticipated bump in Thanksgiving motorists has got as much to do with the slowly improving economy as the tug of heartstrings, says the AAA. All right. That's dull. Plus, It's a story from New York. I'm going to begin to vet how, if I see, I'm going to go through the news every day. If I see any foreign source for a news story, I'm going to throw it in the garbage. You understand me, bud?
Why?
I just, if I see a foreign source for an American story, it's going to go into the garbage. Why? Because an American newspaper or an American press source would have the story much better than some damn Brit who's over here with his thumb parked, and he wouldn't know a gag order from, you know, 40 cents a week, okay? That's number one. Number two, if I'm doing a national story about travel, and I see that it is about New York in particular, with all due respect to my New York listeners, I'm talking about national travel, I'm going to throw that in the garbage too. I don't care about a story that leads off with New Yorkers this or Wisconsin that or Californians that. Now, unfortunately, I have to go through this on the air because I'm teaching you how to pull news. So I'm going to make it easy. The next time I come in here and I sit down and I'm doing a national radio show, which is what I'm doing, and I see some limey newspaper talking to me about something that's happening in L.A., I'm going to wipe with it and throw it out the door. And then I see a story about a national trend in travel and Thanksgiving and grandma, and I see that it's referring to New York State. I'm going to throw that out, and we're going to get our act together here, or we're going to die trying.
Yeah, man, but I don't know what you're talking about. When you say you want to have a news story, you want this story, that story. And then
I want that story, but I want you guys to pull it from the right source.
Yeah, what difference does it make?
I just got done telling you, man. I got some British newspaper talking to me about Mel Gibson over here and Oksana Grigoryeva. These guys are right down the street in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
And they're talking about gag orders? They don't have no gag order. This is some limey sitting in a hotel over there getting hammered on a company dime. He ain't writing the story. Then I'm coming up with this Thanksgiving travel thing, and it's about, and you're talking about New York State. Read these things before you guys pull them, okay? You guys spend so much time pulling stuff.
Yeah, that, you do.
But shut up. Deputies in Fresno armed. Wow, that was a number seven, man. All right, here is a story that becomes more maddening as with each passing day. And it's the foreclosure crisis. You know, it's really interesting to hear people say, well, if you'd pay your mortgage. Let me explain something once again, because it takes a long time. The mortgage relief was supposed to come to people who had been paying their mortgage. They had been paying their mortgage. But because of the banks suddenly freezing credit, businesses suddenly laying people off, people suddenly not having jobs and not having enough money to make their mortgage payments, mortgage relief was on the way because we recognized that the banks and the financial sector had somehow screwed the pooch. That's right. The banks and the financial sector had somehow been sitting around twaddling their twiddles while Rome burned. And the next thing you know, the world is on the brink of collapse and we got to bail them out with money, right? So we say we're going to get a mortgage modification program going so that people are not losing their homes. Now, here's the latest, and this is just the robo-signing scandal. Robo-signing. What does that mean? Automatic signing. Don't check into the background of the people you're lending money to. Don't check into the documentation of whether they have income enough and this and that. Just robo-sign. Just automatically sign. Sign, 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 sign. So you don't know what these mortgages are worth. And they said that this may just be the tip of the iceberg, that there may be the servicing of foreclosures could obscure and possibly evolve into troubles on a global scale, that we are not out of the woods on this thing. And it pisses me off because the banks continue with an arrogance that is unheard of in the history of man on this earth. These bastards and these lenders and all of the rest of them who got the financial sector spinning in a certain direction so they could make their money and they could get the people on the dotted line. And they could run off and have a good time with their bonus and their business and this and that. Now we find out that this paper isn't worth anything, and we still haven't gotten to the bottom of it. There's a 127-page report that was issued today by the government. In essence, banks may be unable to prove that they own the mortgage loans they claim to own. You ready for that? Banks may be unable to prove they own the mortgage loans they claim to own. So what are they saying? You jackasses had better stop or slow down with your foreclosures until you can prove you own the house. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I promise I won't belabor it. I just will say, the government panel says, you say, do anything you want. Do anything you want. Believe anything you want. Believe anything you want. Believe it's all this guy's fault. I don't care. But here's the bottom line is this, folks. The government panel is reporting that we still don't know the extent of this lousy paper that these mortgages were written on, okay? We still don't know the extent, the depth of this toxic situation. And that there is still a threat to the global economy. And that these banks that are foreclosing on people, they don't have any more instinct or knowledge as to what they own than the man on the moon. The paper they've got could very well be worthless. It may not indicate they own the house at all. Maybe there's some other guy that owns a house. You remember, all of these banks were packaging and they were wrapping these bundling these loans and selling them off. To who? A 127-page report issued today. In essence, banks may be unable to prove that they own the mortgage loans they claim to own. Now, let me ask you people in the banking business, just how far down the toilet do you want to take this country and the world in your effort to be a bank, in your effort to be official and officious, and the obnoxious bastards that you have been, the unthinking, unfeeling, auto jackballs that you are, rude as hell, stupid, that doesn't even begin to cover it. I'd even go so far as to call you thieving. I don't think there's a word invented for what you people have done. Not a word. And you go about business as if this is just, we didn't do anything. That was that division. And I'm telling you, why you people are not in a prison cell, I have no idea. But I can only hope and pray. Only hope and pray that when all of this is done, amid the tussle of lawsuits over individual foreclosures, I hope you get your asses so sued that you are worthless at the end of this process. Several employees or contractors for the banks testified, listen to this, that they signed thousands of foreclosure documents without knowing any of the facts they were declaring to be true. In some cases, they backdated documents.
Being all upset for?
What are you talking about, bud? How many times have I told you? I know people that are losing their homes, okay?
Yeah, it's serious, man. You know.
Someday you're going to own a house. And you know what? You know why you're lucky?
Why?
Because when you finally own a house, this stuff will be over. The world will have learned a lesson. America will have learned a lesson. And a whole new generation of banking executives and banking professionals will have taken the place of this generation of scum. And we will begin to return to that time when banks were all about funding and helping to grow communities. They were all about making the base of a community strong, business and homes.
Kind of like that guy on that show that you like?
What show that I like?
You know, the guy, what's the guy's name? George Murphy.
Who's George Murphy?
Yeah, the guy, George Murphy, that... In Wonderful Life.
George Bailey.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like George Bailey. Troubled home ownership and a massive backlog of foreclosures around the country remain among the biggest factors holding back the economic recovery. And they're a painful legacy of the mortgage meltdown that cascaded into financial catastrophe, slamming investors and institutions around the world that had tied their fortunes to securities based on U.S. home mortgages. What a con job we pulled on the world. The Justice Department and authorities in all 50 states are investigating possible improprieties by the banks, while the financial industry maintains it was just a handful of employees who failed to follow proper procedures and that the underlying facts in each foreclosure was correct. Well, you know what? Then prove it. I'm telling you right now, they better, too. I don't think any lawsuit, I don't think there is a judge in this country, I don't think there's a judge in this country that should allow this to stand until they walk into a courtroom and they prove it, man. They maintain that a handful of employees, well, now ain't that just so special. Those of us who lived through the Watergate era, we heard that one too. Once they get their paperwork in order, they argue, mass foreclosures can proceed. Oh, well, once they get their paperwork in order? What paperwork? I'll tell you what paperwork you need to get in order. Proving that you own the houses that you're going to foreclose on. There's some paperwork for you to get in order. Go ahead, get that in order. I dare you. How do you get in order proof that you own a house that the loan for which you bundled off and sold to somebody else? You sold it to so many guys. Man, it's down the road 85 miles. Some cat, some dude that's watering a mule in Mongolia. That's who owns the loan.
That probably is right, man. And by the time they got done selling it, man, it probably owned by one of them guys.
Probably got a water well. He's investing in a water well in American real estate.
I'm telling you. By the time Bank of America and Chase figure out who owns half these houses that they think they own, they're going to find out that Rasputin the Mad Monk holds the paper on all of them. You guys got, I'm telling you, you got some gall. The American Securitization Forum, a trade group for the industry that packages mortgages into traceable bonds. There's a flat, you know what, there's a unique thought, traceable. Produced a study this week finding the legal worries to be overblown. As long as the contract between borrower and lender, the mortgage note, is transferred in any deal, questions about the mortgage itself shouldn't be a problem, the ASF said. Yeah, as long as. The longstanding and consistently applied rule in the United States is that the mortgage follows the note. When a mortgage note is transferred in connection with a securitization, ownership of the mortgage automatically follows and is transferred to the mortgage note transferee. Great. Let's see the note, man, and don't give me this bullcrap about, well, it must have been transferred because the mortgage was. No. Uh-uh. No, we ain't playing that, man. We already got your employees signing documents that they don't even read. We got your employees admitting to the fact that they signed documents that they backdated. So they already got caught with their hand in the cookie jar here, man. So don't give me that stuff about how, well, we're not assuming anything anymore. You guys are on the hot seat. And I'm telling you, you know, in other words, we're going to hold you cats in the bank to the same standard that you hold people that you lent money to, okay? We're going to turn the Bunsen burner under your asses up to broil. And guess what? If you guys can't come through with the right paper, if we find out that thus and so wasn't, I hope there's a jail cell for you. I'm telling you.
Yeah, they're going to put a big guy like that in jail. Are you crazy, man?
They're never going to do that.
Yeah? You think so, huh? They put plenty of guys from Wall Street in the joint. I'd like to see them start locking up some of these bankers. I've seen enough Wall Street guys. I want to see guys from the local bank go to prison. They think they're untouchable, these guys. They think that the only cats that the federals want are these slobs on Wall Street. Because the Bernie Madoffs and this and the that, those guys are, you know, they make good copy. I'll tell you what makes good copy. They start slamming some of these bank presidents in prison. I'd love that.
Yeah, I'm never going to do it, man, because they got too much of a rep that the average people like.
Oh, my ass. They got a rep the average people like. When you find out what these guys have been doing to the average guy, the average people will be screaming for their necks. The panel called the industry arguments the best-case scenario, but warned that the worst-case scenario, one articulated by academics and homeowner advocates, is considerably grimmer. The risk stems from the possibility the rapid growth of mortgage securitization outpaced the ability of the legal and financial system, listen to this, outpaced the ability of the legal and financial system to track mortgage loan ownership. As the mortgage model changed from one in which prospective homeowners borrowed from and paid back a single bank to one where a mortgage loan can be resold dozens of times and folded into a bond packaging many mortgages, tracking ownership became more complicated. I'll tell you, to me, the only solution is, unless you got the proof, the note, as they say, the actual ownership of the mortgage, then I'm telling you, you ain't foreclosing on nothing. And if you try, the only guy, the sheriff, is, you know, these guys, they send a sheriff out there. You know that?
Yeah, they just send them out to throw the guy out, which they ought to do.
No, they ain't ought to do that. No, they ain't.
Why not?
Because they don't know whether they own that house or not. That's what this whole story's about, okay? So when they send a sheriff out there, they ought to send a sheriff back to the bank and arrest the president of the bank. Hi, did you throw those people out? No, but I'm arresting you.
I don't understand.
Well, you will. No, I didn't throw anybody out. No, didn't do that. But I am placing you under arrest. You and you and you and you. Just like that movie we saw the other night.
That movie was bitching. What was that called?
That was called High Plains Drifter.
Yeah, what was that?
That was Clint Eastwood. You remember that, when that one scene?
Yeah, he's going on you and you and you. The Lago Volunteers. And you and you.
Yeah. We're going to form the Lago Volunteers. You're in it, and you, and you, and you. All you people out there.
You're going to do it all on bankers.
Right. Send the sheriff in there. You're under arrest, and you, and you, and you. All right. And so that's where that is, man. We got one other story of what we call high value. Ronnie Chasen, a top Hollywood publicist. This is a horror. You know what? I don't even want to read this, man. It's too much of a bummer. And this is kind of a bummer, but it's sort of cool, too. No, it isn't cool either. I'm gonna have to hold off on these bummer stories, guys. Let me tell you what. The top 10 selling singles and albums sold on Apple Incorporated's iTunes. Number one, Teenage Dream, Glee Cast, featuring Darren Criss. We Are Who We Are, Firework, Katy Perry, Raise Your Glass, Pink. The Time, Dirty Bit, that's Black Eyed Peas. What's My Name, Rihanna and Drake, Like a G6, The Castorax. Only Girl in the World, Rihanna. Number 9, Just a Dream, Nelly. And number 10, Bottoms Up with Trey Songz. So those are the top 10 singles on iTunes. The top albums, Man on the Moon 2, The Legend of Mr. Rager, that's Kid Cudi, Speak Now, Taylor Swift, The Lady Killer, My Kind of Party, Jason Aldean, Sigh No More, Mumford & Sons, and AB3, Alter Bridge. Alter Bridge out with a new album, huh? I got to get that one because I like those guys.
What, are you a Christian or something?
No, I ain't a Christian. I just... All right, 877-876. Phil, don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Google's new cell phone tries to replace credit cards, but would you trust paying for products using your cell phone? We may do that story, we may not. An ambulance denied access to an injured player on a newly remodeled football field at a high school. You can't have an ambulance driving out on a newly remodeled football field, even if the kid's head is rolling off of his neck. We'll be back. Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, it's football season, you know, and high school football season, as well as every other kind of football season. A high school principal in San Jose is under fire for refusing to let an ambulance drive onto a football field to help an injured player. Now, why did this ambulance not get permission to drive onto the football field to help the injured player? Well, it was a brand-new football field. 14-year-old... Keanu Gallardo, excuse me, 14-year-old Keanu Gallardo's mother is waiting for an apology after her son suffered a concussion during a game at Del Mar High on October the 29th. This is in Northern California. After a 911 call was placed and an ambulance arrived, Gallardo had to lay and wait for emergency workers to haul a gurney 75 yards downfield because the principal, Liz Seabury, says she was following district orders banning motorized vehicles on the school's recently remodeled football field. " It's not known if the district has taken any action against the principal or if it plans to. Tuesday morning, a district spokesperson said they had no comment whatsoever because the situation is undergoing an investigation and we got to figure out whether we got jack balls working for us or what we're doing for a living over here, man. We might as well close this whole thing up, man, and turn it into a banana stand or something. Hi, I'm the principal of the school. Let me just be very clear here. There are some stories that are just so obvious. You want to weep. You want to cry. You don't know what you want to do.
That's just like, what's his name? Marlon Brando.
Right. I wanted to cry.
Yeah, do that impression.
Okay, this is Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. I wanted to cry. I wanted to tear my teeth out of my head. It's not that good, man.
I love that, man.
All right, anyway, here is Channel 7 in San Francisco, KGO Television. Asking parents to react to the news that the principal wouldn't allow an ambulance access to the newly remodeled field.
Well, the child's house needs to come first. That's most important. I mean, and to actually hear this coming from you instead of coming from the school is actually disturbing, too.
It makes me very upset. It makes me kind of concerned about my child's safety.
I think that they don't let any ambulance go on any field at any high school games or at any game period. I don't think that she did anything wrong. I don't think it... I work in an emergency room. I don't think it delayed his care at all.
Okay. Well, he's a child. He's not a adult. He is an amateur. He's not a professional. You know as well as I do, professional players get a kind of treatment on the field that is second to none when it comes to the injury to a professional football player. We have neck braces. We have gurneys. We've got an ambulance right there behind the bench. So that you're transporting a player from the middle of the field to the sideline where the ambulance is or where a golf cart is or where other transport is to get that player as rapidly as possible to the medical service that he requires. If it's a hospital or emergency room, an x-ray machine, whatever it is that he needs. You got a young man who's not a professional. He's an amateur. He's a high school student. He's a minor. And he has a concussion. I don't get it, you know. However, maybe what they need is to get a golf cart. Or I'll be honest with you, folks. This is a teacher. This principal, this Liz Seabury, and the people that she works for. These are people that are they're almost sociopathic. And what do I mean by that? Anyone with any real sense would understand, you know what, you can take your football field and you could park it up your you-know-what. I'm putting an ambulance on that field or whatever I got to do to get that kid some medical service. That's all there is to it. Well, you're going to be fired. Well, you go right ahead and fire me then. And won't you feel like a jackass, man, when I go to the media with this on Monday and I say I just got canned for letting an ambulance go on a field to save a kid's life because, well, it was a concussion. It happens all the time in football. It may happen all the time in football, but we're talking about a 16-year-old kid here. You know, that brain is still developing inside that still-developing skull. And I want to make sure that that child has the right amount of medical attention and as quickly as he can get it. And that's the way we play the game at the high school level. Now, if you don't like that...
Well, we're the district, and we just reseeded this field. My goodness gracious golly gee whiz.
You just reseeded the field, did you?
Oh, it's a brand new one. It's just like the one they have at Giant Stadium.
Oh, well, geez, shut my mouth, man. Well, if I'd have known that. This is a kid, man, okay? And you know what? So what's wrong with this person? What's wrong with somebody like that? What is wrong with... I'm telling you, right? What is wrong with... I'm telling you, she wasn't born with a conscience.
Everything you always talk about, people have got to be like Ted Bundy or something.
Yeah, why do you do that? Maybe she's just dumb.
Well, she could be dumb, but she's a principal of a high school, which means that at some point I think she had to have some education. I don't think she's dumb so much as how can you not recognize what your obligation is to your students and to the families of those students, not to your football field. No, don't. He's got a concussion. I'd like to take the ambulance. No. No, no, you better not because we just had it reseated. Well, I mean...
Well, how long did it take him to go down and get him?
I don't know, man. They got to haul a gurney 75 yards downfield. Now, this is a gurney. Now, what does that mean, 75 yards downfield? I'll tell you what it means. First of all, the ambulance could not maneuver in behind the benches. So it was at the end of the stadium, behind the end zone. So that means that there is a very limited amount of space for that ambulance to work in. Either they get on the field, drive down there and get the kid, or they have to keep the ambulance parked there at that end zone. And the kid was injured 75 yards down the field. That's the only access they have.
Why don't they use like a golf cart or something?
Because they ain't got no golf cart, man. Do you understand what I'm talking about? The big concern for these jackasses is because they got a field and they had it reseeded or resided or re-something. And they're just in love with that field, and they ain't got a golf cart. They don't have no ambulance. They ain't got nothing for love or money, man, for the players. All they got is a nice, big, fat, green field for the kid to get his brains rocked in. Anyway, that's where that's at. Now, here is a very intelligent. Matthew Dean says he feels the blame goes three ways. The principal's an idiot. The emergency responders should have. He says the emergency responders should have overridden there. They should have said, we don't care what you think. We're driving out there. If I'd been driving that ambulance, I would have done it. And I would have loved to see the coach stand there and tell me, hey, you know, you just ripped up my field. Really? I tell you what, why don't we resod it? We can use you to sort of fill in some of the divots. What do you think about that?
Ah, ha, ha. I'll have your job.
Yeah, that's great. Phil Hendry Show produced by Jason Ranch, technical director Charles Wigand, and our associate producer and screener Dan Northcraft. PhilHendryShow.com. See you tonight. It's garbage time, bud.
That's right. I got to take it out.
Right.
Phil Hendry.